It's that time again.
Yep.
You know, producer's choice, Jacob. Woo. On Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education, or more specifically, the educated educators get to answer questions potentially about education from producer Jacob. Producer Jacob, show's all yours. I'll hand it off, man.
Tim, Johnny, I want to start things off with a very important question. Did you see the Grammys last night? And who has any thoughts about those Grammys? Am I right?
Hey, man, I love watching the Grammys.
I'm, you know, when I stopped watching the Grammys, and I guess this means I'm old, when I went, wait a minute, where's U2?
Well, Tim, you missed the excellent Ozzy Osbourne tribute.
Okay.
War Pigs, sang by Post Malone. It was pretty epic. With Slash playing guitar and Chad Smith on drums. And
they had some pretty great
performances.
Yeah. They did that at the Ozzy tribute. I did see that when they did it for the Ozzy tribute, and that was really good. Yeah.
Yeah, that was cool. And then again, just a great to see, you know, comedians, you know, like artists, whether they're, you know, musical artists or whether they're actors and actresses, just the creative community speaking really thoughtfully to the political situation in the United States, and really great messages to be shared. I was, you know, I'm consistently blown away by artists, you know, sharing political views in such a thoughtful way. And they did that last night, ranging from the, you know, the more protest leaning kind of comments to the really, I think, generative, you know, lessons shared by especially like artist Bad Bunny, you know, really emphasizing, you know, disagreements part of life. Let's really lean into love and taking care of one another. And, you know, a lot of people reminding the general public, hey, I was too an immigrant, or my parents are immigrants, and really thinking about what it means to be human and what role art and artists play in reminding us of our humanity, the good, the bad, the sad, the, you know, the exciting, the party music and the music that we grieve to. It was just really, I think, a powerful, you know, moment and message. And a lot of people rose to the occasion, you know, exercised their civic duty, you know, and I thought shared really great messages for the viewing public. So, you know, I know everyone today is not happy about that stuff. And you know, Trevor Noah, you know, as comedians do, I thought made some very thoughtful, poignant remarks about, you know, both Democrats and Republicans. And that I do read in the headlines today that Donald Trump did not find them amusing. But hey, remember, humor is one of the historic ways that we handle tense moments and that we speak truth to the situations going on. I thought it was really tastefully done. So overall, you know, aside from all of the glitz and glamour and, you know, the politics of who wins and who doesn't, I thought it was a pretty powerful night for probably all fans. And so, you know, just a reminder, music is, you know, the soundtrack of all of our lives, and artists and creative people pour a lot into that, and they have a lot to teach us. So, you know, it was a good night.
Man. So well, there you go, Jacob. You wanted to know, Johnny got your answer.
For Choo Choo producer, Jacob's Choice, chairman of the board. Ow!
You now have two choices.
Chairman of the board, Jacob.
Ow! Jacob's chairman of the board.
I bet the board is spelled B-O-R-E-D.
We choose to go to the moon.
Life's full of tough choices, isn't it?
Yeah. You choose poorly.
Folks, we were talking about the Grammys. We were talking about celebrities, influential people, the elites, the culture makers coming out and speaking truth to power. But now we're going to talk about something important. And that is, This week we celebrated Groundhog Day.
Uh-oh. That's right.
In the United States. And unfortunately, that Rat Fink Punxsutawney Phil saw his shadow, meaning we're doomed to have six more weeks of winter this year. Today, we're going to be engaging in a barely coherent medley of Groundhog Day-related questions.
Nice.
All right.
Woo-hoo.
In order to assist me, I've invited two barely coherent guests back on their own show, Dr. Tim Slecker, Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, thank you so much for being here.
You know, Jacob.
Yeah, we're here for it, Jacob. We love Producer's Choice.
And I love having you guys here because it gives me an opportunity to come up with very interesting questions for very interesting people. And I think there's a synergy there that our listeners just really love and enjoy engaging with, even if the questions are a little bit strange and based on Groundhog Day, which is only tangentially related to education. But we'll see how I do it. Question number one for Dr. Tim Slecker. Do you believe that Punxsutawney Phil can really tell if we're going to have six more weeks of winter? If so, why? And if not, why not?
Well, Jacob, being a Pennsylvania native and being back in Pennsylvania and having been to a few live, bringing Punxsutawney Phil out of his, slumber to forecast the weather, I believe deeply in the culture and the celebration of Punxsutawney Phil as a forecaster of the best things to come as spring is on its way, and he has never been wrong. Even when he's right, guaranteed, after Groundhog's Day, spring is coming. So how about that, man? That dude always knows spring is on its way. Might be a little bit more winter beforehand, but I have a feeling that they never really asked him the right question.
That's fair.
You know?
Yeah.
And he's been kind of pigeonholed by the fact that people want to know specifically, is spring right around the corner or do we have six more weeks of winter? Well, right around the corner has never been defined. And so the answer could be six more weeks of winter and right around the corner. So how's that for a little in-depth discussion of Punxsutawney? And for all those other groundhogs out there, you guys are frauds.
All right, Dr. Tim Slecker with a very tepid endorsement of Punxsutawney Phil's forecasting abilities. Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, same question. Is this magic real or not, and why do you think so?
Well, Jacob, I really like Tim's response because, the groundhog is right. Like, spring is coming. It's just a matter of how long it's going to take, and probably finds it quite amusing that, at least once a year he pokes his head up and there is a bunch of people around. I would love to know, his side of Groundhog's Day. What's like to, come out of that, that habitat is, and there's all these people and to poke his head out and into the weather that he did seems to make an accurate move going back in. So I like to say like it doesn't have scientific consensus behind it, but the tradition itself, as Tim noted, like he's been to these, like folks, attend them. Every single year teaching on Groundhog's Day, we talked about Groundhog's Day and always in climates with pretty inclement winters. So it was always kind of like you had to read the room. Did the room seem to want more winter or, was it ready for spring? And you kind of, spun it whichever direction gave people the most energy that day. But I love traditions, especially traditions that bring people together, whether it's in their celebration or in their commiserating over a longer winter. Big fan of Groundhog's Day. I'm not sure if it's scientific consensus. I think it remains in the myth column for me. But who doesn't like a good myth? So I'm a big fan.
Well, Johnny, I'm glad we're sticking with you because you're right on to question number two, man. Do you believe that cultural traditions like Groundhog Day are valuable, or do these antiquated traditions just prop up superstition and anti-scientific thinking?
Oh, that's a tough one, Jacob, especially in the climate we're in, where you know, scientific thought is challenged publicly all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be like, oh yeah, you know, it's okay for us to just, you know, sometimes ignore science. I actually think there's, you know, value to obviously traditions. And I think in the case of this one, I'm going to say I'm a big fan of it, and I'll get scientific for a moment, because I believe really strongly, and I don't have the facts on this related to Groundhog's Day, but we'd always talk about this in my classrooms, especially when I was teaching upper level grades, because it would come up like, come on, this is kind of hokey. Like that groundhog really can't tell whether or not it's winter or going to be winter longer, or, you know, spring is here. But, you know, I would always say, especially in my science classes, like, but environment has intelligence. And intelligence isn't just something that belongs only to us human beings, right? And so there are a lot of signs, like when leaves change colors, or, you know, when it's about to rain and certain plants turn their leaves, you know, to shape in a form that catches water. You know, there's a lot of environmental or ecological intelligence out there in the world. And yes, although we've created a rather, I'm going to use a giant word, anthropomorphized, that's when you assign human characteristics or assign human culture to an animal or a non-human. Well, while we've anthropomorphized the groundhog, I always say it's like, it's a fun tradition that reminds us to listen to the environment, to pay attention to the more than human world and what it's telling us. Certainly something the science community has been saying for decades. Hey, the world is telling us that we're not behaving in a way that supports life on this planet. We've got to change how we behave. So I think there's an underlying larger message here that I'm a fan of with Groundhog's Day. It's like, yes, it's mythical. Yes, there isn't a ton of scientific or any real scientific evidence to this, but I think there's a good lesson in this one, where we're not entirely ignoring science. We're turning our attention to the natural world. We're saying, hey, I'm a little bit more attuned, or at least I'm reminded on Groundhog's Day that animals, plants, you know, other species have intelligence. And what are they telling us? How do we read the world we're living in and then, you know, make decisions based on that? I mean, it's a far leap. Like I'm saying that's a pretty heavy lesson to embed in something as fun and silly as Groundhog's Day. But hey, Groundhog's Day can be more than just a reminder of a really good Bill Murray movie.
I agree, Johnny. I agree. Though it is a pretty good movie starring Bill Murray himself.
Great movie.
I thought Punxsutawney Phil was, again, disappointing for me this year because he's, you know, he said there's going to be more winter. And then did he really have to do a 15-minute speech about Trump afterwards? I'm like, come on, man. You know, there's a time and place for politics. Keep it out of the ceremony. But Tim, same question to you. Do you think all this witchcraft with Punxsutawney Phil is holding us back as a people, or do you think these cultural traditions have a value unto themselves?
All right. First thing, statistics, okay? Meteorologists predicting weather 1 to 3 months out, roughly 50%. Punxsutawney Phil, over 100 plus years, 40% accurate. Now.
So he's worse than a coin flip.
He's worse than a coin flip predicting the weather. It kind of goes back to my first answer. It's really about the cultural tradition. He said Punxsutawney Phil has been doing this since 1889. And knowing that, the other great thing is that he's probably the oldest living groundhog ever, since he's been, you know, at work for, 100 plus years?
You would have to think so, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so just on that fact there, he needs great kudos because, you know, once a year, who wants to have to get up and do their job? It's a tough life. But the culture around that, though, I mean, that the hats, you know, the funny hats, I think it is. It's kind of a, it's a, you, When I say uniquely American, I guarantee the Punxsutawney Phil itself is, quote, not uniquely American. But there is this kind of weird thing where it's like, Americans, Groundhog Day, we're like, really? You look at that? But understanding that the idea of connections of culture to, like Johnny said, the environment, and then connections to our animal friends, and bringing those together to remind people of those relationships that all living things have, and all of those living things, the way we fare based on the environmental conditions. I think it's a nice thing to be able to have some fun, particularly when you're teaching with students, to share, you know, the kind of silliness about it, but then, you know, an opportunity to really take that moment to make those points about, you know, what is it in our culture that for, you know, as long as back as we can. In fact, you know, I just read today in an early American, probably around the year 600, somewhere down in South America, a new tomb opened up, and the carving, you know, shows an owl, but then under the beak of the owl is a human. And so the connections between people, animals, and the places they are have always been something a part of, you know, that human understanding that we have those connections. And so if Punxsutawney Phil continues to remind us, even kind of with a little bit of silliness, that, you know, living things are connected. So how's that for a long and winding answer?
My question for you, Tim, is did the Mayan owl see its shadow when it came out of the cave? And will we have six more weeks of winter?
I think he saw the shadow of the human being under his beak. I'm not sure how that plays in weather or winter forecasting.
It's sort of lost in translation between cultures. You know, we can't really tell what their owl-based weather traditions are. It's these things get lost over the centuries. Tim, I'm going to keep it with you because I'm really interested in your answers so far today. You've been really knocking it out of the park. Question number three, Tim, what have you seen so far in 2026 that makes you wonder if you're stuck waking up every day in 2025?
Oh, boy, it can feel like 2025 every day. If you turn on, you know, turn on the news, yeah, what has our current president put in Truth Social today? Oh, my God, here we go again. You know what? Even that quote, that the whole idea of Groundhog Day as some way of viewing your life, I think that is potentially also an opportunity to say what are the things in anybody's life that are, you know, repetitive and no, maybe even normal, but at what point do you start to have that Groundhog's Day feeling, which is kind of a feeling of unease? And are there things that you have an opportunity as we move past Groundhog's Day and we're turning the corner towards, you know, better weather at some point in the future? Can you also change up a little bit about what you do that, you know what, it is Groundhog's Day, but you don't have to check your email first thing in the morning. You don't have to turn on CNN or Fox News first thing in the morning. You know, you can choose to start the day by, you know, going out to your backyard, finding some small critter, waking it up, holding it out to the public. And hey, all this is, I think the kind of being trapped in that frame of mind, it really is. I think it's a good thing to actually call yourself out and see that might be happening and kind of figure out, you know, what is it that you can do to change up? Because sadly, I'd say there are a lot of things that, boy, you know what? What is it saying? No matter how much things change, they stay the same. Well, be that change that we all need to kind of push against the Groundhog's Day phenomena that makes us all go, oh, not again.
Tim, I like that answer because you've created a whole new aspect of a holiday. We're going to add to Groundhog Day the movie-based interpretation of say, hey, you're waking up every day doing the same thing. What can we change? I think that's something we could all learn from and pass that along for the holiday next year. We'll get right on it. Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, same question to you. I don't know if your answer will go in the same direction Tim's did, but what have you observed so far this year that makes you think, man, am I waking up in 2025 again?
Well, you know, Jacob, I think, wow, that's a, I want to have a really great answer. I'm still stuck in, you can go out to your backyard and lift up a small critter and show it to the world. Response from Tim. I love that. No, but Jacob, I feel like trying to be positive here. And I think that's the message that is deeper in this is I feel like a lot of, this is just me being older and reflecting, it's getting deep. More often than not, I wouldn't have imagined that 2026, I'd be waking up to the things I'm waking up to. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like I'm waking up to a lot of what I experienced in 2025. I feel like, but I'm also waking up in a sense of like, wow, really in shock, because if I were to have gone to bed, say in, you know, 2006 and woken up in 2026, like a mini Rip Van Winkle here, you know, I would be just shocked that we are where we are as a community, specifically politically in the moment that we're in. You know, like I don't want to get too heavy with it, but that's a big sentiment that's on my mind when you ask about waking up and do I feel like I'm in 2025? I mean, sometimes I wake up and I feel like I'm in a bad history lesson about 1930 something. And so that's heavy, that's deep, and that's not as positive, but I want to put a positive spin on it because I think that, you know, everything has, it contributes something to forward momentum. Like Tim said, spring's coming, regardless of whether or not there's six more weeks of winter or not, still spring happens after that. And that's my reminder too. I'm waking up feeling a lot like it's 2025 all over again. We're at a dead standstill, if not in a worse place. We're still, you know, fighting with one another about, you know, distracting things. You know, schools haven't necessarily gotten better. We're, you know, we've done nothing about gun laws, even though we have continued school shootings. We have, you know, only increased violence against immigrants in our communities. You know, and I just feel like, wow, man, I would have expected us to have been further along. And the reminder is that all things pass, right? History's taught us this, that we figure out a way together. We have the human capacity and the morality to move through tough times together and to say, hey, we got to figure something out, you know, and I'll connect it to Groundhog's Day so that by next Groundhog's Day, we don't feel the same way about the way things are. Right. And that's my hope and take of it is like I wake up feeling like, whoa, not only do I feel like we're in 2025, but I feel like I'm in a bad history lesson from the 1930s. And only we can be the change in that. So rather than continue what I felt was a big part of 2025, like pointing fingers and being really vitriol about how we solve the problems and instead just roll up our sleeves and figure out how to work together towards what supports our community, towards the common good of, you know, a democracy, one that values human rights, one that cares about community and strength, and that's nonpartisan, that really belongs to the legacy and the honor of being part of a democracy, not to any political party. So that's my hope, is like, just like spring, even though the groundhog went back in its hole and we have six more weeks of winter, maybe we have a few more weeks, proverbially, I'll say, of you know, the political climate we are in, but it will change. Just like spring comes, democracy comes around and it strengthens. And so I'm really going to lean towards that. Let's remember that even more dark days of winter, right, means that, hey, spring is coming. And then I'll quote Jacob. It reminds me of a quote from the playwright Bertolt Brecht. When a kid in a play said, you know, asks his mom, will there be singing in dark times? And she responds, yes, they'll be singing about the dark times. So I'll tie that back to our, you know, post Grammys discussion and then Groundhog's Day here. Just because it's still winter and it's cold out, or just because democracy feels frozen, doesn't mean that it's not going to thaw. So let's sing about the freeze. Let's work together towards the thaw, and let's get spring here, both the season and the strength of a vibrant democracy.
That was a good answer, Johnny. I like that. Wow.
Boom.
Hey. You and Tim are real deep thinkers. I was thinking, you know, I don't know, the Grammys were good this year, just like last year. I'm like, what is this 2025 we're talking about here? But you guys took in a much deeper, more introspective direction. And though Punxsutawney Phil saw three more years of Trump, I would like to think that we're going to make it through just fine. Next question comes from my little brother, Lincoln. And it's a spring-related question. Lincoln writes, Dear Tim and Johnny, what are your favorite spring sports?
Oh, yeah.
And I'm asking you, Johnny.
Oh, okay. Well, I love sports, all of them. Spring sports, I will have to say, I'm gonna say hockey is a winter sport, even though Wisconsin listeners and Minnesota listeners and Michigan listeners, you are like, who are you kidding? Hockey's a year-round sports where we come from. You know, and the Stanley Cup is spring and summer. So I would say hockey is always my number one. But technically on the books, I wouldn't consider it a spring sport. It's a winter sport. And my favorite spring sport is sometimes a fall sport, depending on where you're listening from. But where I grew up and played, it was a spring sport. And my favorite spring sport is lacrosse. I love field lacrosse, like the outdoor kind, because I know some of you listeners in colder parts remember play box lacrosse and indoor lacrosse. But spring lacrosse, my favorite spring sport.
So you said, I can't do hockey. That's more of a winter thing. So I'll do the most hockey-like other sport I can find.
Yeah, and pretty much.
And
pretty
make
much.
That my favorite. Okay.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much.
I appreciate your honesty on that one, John.
It's hockey's springtime sibling.
There you go.
You know, you gotta play your spring lacrosse, too. It's a good way to get outside and run around instead of skate everywhere. So even though it's most often in the places listed, it's played on frozen ground.
True that. Dr. Tim Slecker, same question to you from my little brother, Lincoln. What is your favorite spring sport?
My favorite spring sport, Jacob, I got to tell you, playing football and being a wrestler my whole, you know, time as being an athlete, and, you know, hockey sometimes. My favorite spring sport was no sport.
Say it ain't so. But,
well, it was because, holy crap, I can actually go home after school. I mean, I didn't, you know, you don't know what, if you play football and quote, you know, a winter sport, a fall and a winter sport, you don't go home after school until like March, you know? And so the whole idea of like, hey, what are you doing after school? Going to the locker room, getting dressed, going to practice. But I will say this, Jacob, just for a little bit of a curveball. Well, you know, that's me. That's what I do. I think if I can get it up here at the right time. Spring turkey season in Pennsylvania, my favorite sport, because actually that was as a guy who really liked to hunt. But if you played football and wrestling and stuff like that, you couldn't get to go hunting. And so when spring gobbler season came around, oh, you finally get to go back out in the woods. So my favorite spring sport, Jacob, turkey hunting.
I like that answer, Tim. That was that's a classic Tim bomb. Totally out of there, but a great answer that brings us back around to the real spirit of the spring, which is I believe a moment ago you were saying we should be good friends with our our animals, our animal brothers out there in the woods, and now we're nailing them with a crossbow from 75 yards away. But either way, it's a good way to enjoy and appreciate the outdoors.
Hey, we all got to eat.
I agree. And I'm going to come out there to Pennsylvania, get me a turkey leg off of you next time I have a chance. But guys, we have wound up at the end of the Producer's Choice show, as sad as it is. But in case you're worried, we do have one last question.
Let's go!
60-second question, Tim Slecker. Speaking of repeating the same things over and over again, I feel like I've seen the matchup in this year's big game before. Uh-oh. The Patriots and Seahawks are meeting once again in the quote-unquote big game, which we have to call it on the radio. Who do you think's going to win this big game?
Wow, Jake. Wait, the Steelers aren't in it?
I thought so, too, but it turns out, no, they lost the first game in the playoffs in embarrassing fashion.
My goodness. I mean, you know, as far as I understood, the Steelers were in the Super Bowl every year. You know what, Jacob? You know what? I'm going to go with making a choice on my favorite place to visit. Love Seattle. Going with the Seahawks.
Let's go Hawks. Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, same question. Who's going to win the big game, Seahawks or Patriots?
Oh, man, I'll keep it short and simple. As much as I'm still, you know, sad that the Lions didn't win, then I was bummed that the Bills didn't win, then I was even more bummed that the Bears didn't go. It's like none of my teams that I was hopeful for, you know, got as close as I would have liked. But I do live close to Seattle. I'm going to say I'm going to be rooting for the Seahawks. Go Hawks this weekend. And I think they've got the edge. They're going to take this Super Bowl and make a lot of people who are nearby me here in Washington quite happy. So let's go Hawks.
Producer's Choice show. Producer's Choice for the win. I'm going to say Seahawks 25, Patriots 21 in the Super Bowl. We'll see if I'm right next week. Ooh, and with that, yeah. Tim, I give it to you.
Well, now it's time for your moment of zen. I believe there are huge numbers of people in this country who would be willing to have radical changes in our economic and social system in order to make it a more egalitarian society and do away with homelessness and hunger and clean up the environment. But these people have no voice. They have no way of expressing themselves. Elections give them no way of expressing themselves.
Hey there, Pencil Busters. This is Producer Jacob, and thank you for listening to the Producer's Choice show. If you enjoyed this show, check out all the Busted Pencils programs, starting out Monday with Homeroom, Wednesday with Class in Session, and of course, you can always find us every Saturday across the Civic Media Network for 1 hour of your favorite blue-collar scholars, Tim, Johnny, and Jacob, and keep busting pencils.